Welcome to Shh, We're Reading Dirty Books. This is Kalina.
And this is Celette.
And we're happy to be back with you in a new season for the podcast as far as our timeline goes. I know it doesn't make a lot of sense to you.
It makes it's just none March. Sense to you guys.
it's not the beginning of a year. It's not the beginning of a quarter, even. It's just March.
It's just March.
But it's also the beginning of a new podcast year for us.
We've been running for 7 years, guys. Seven.
Yep. This is the beginning of year seven. So we're happy that you're still with us, or if you're new, welcome. Mm-hmm. As we mentioned at last podcast a little bit, we're just, you know, we're going to do whatever books we want to do now. I mean, there's still going to be romance. Everything will be romance. But so as this book is in evidence, we're doing contemporary because we feel like it.
Right. So it's not mainly going to be paranormal, and I still got to work on getting all those slogans worked on. But hey, I'll get to it when I get to it.
You probably will have it by the time they're hearing this.
I mean, maybe. but yes. Hey, before we get into this amazing book, this fucking amazing book that we just read, I'm going to give you a quickie.
Okay.
And that is, what is the worst vegetable?
What is the worst vegetable? Okay. Well, I have one answer that will get dismissed for technicalities, which is tomatoes are the worst vegetable, but they're not technically a vegetable.
They're fruit.
And I only truly believe that about raw tomatoes, and I still can force myself to eat them if they're just like hanging around and shit. I'm not going to be obnoxious and pick them out.
Okay.
Is there something? Oh, okra is something that I will just flat out not eat.
100%.
Will not eat it fried. Will not eat it in a salad. If it touched that bowl, I'm not engaging with that dish in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. That's fucking gross. It's slimy and disgusting. Fuck off, okra. Okay, that's probably it. Okra.
I'm with you on the fucking okra thing. I will fall on the floor and start convulsing. I fucking hate okra. I don't care how much you are going to try to convince us, Emily, but that shit is nasty.
So nasty.
And look, I'm Asian. I eat lots of weird food.
You eat weird ass shit.
Weird ass shit. And I will not touch okra. So. Mm-mm.
And generally, frying can save everything.
Right.
It cannot save okra.
No.
It can't save it.
No, that is still okra.
Identifiably okra underneath, and it's upsetting.
The best thing to do with okra is to destroy it. Yes. And never make it edible, available for people to consume ever again.
That's the best thing to do.
Just saying. I don't remember what the two worst vegetables were that our two main characters talked about.
I do.
Do you? Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what they said.
Just real quick before we move on, I just had a thought. I Googled it. Turns out okra is also a fruit. Fuck off vegetables that are fruits.
I think they need to figure that shit out.
I really think it has to do with the way they grow in the seeds.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? That one's full of seeds too, which is like tomatoes problem. And I'm like, I bet you this is why it's a fucking fruit. And I Googled it, and they're like, yes, botanically, they are considered fruits. But they're eaten as vegetables. And I'm like, fucking stop doing this to us, botany. Anyway, okay, so in the book, the two worst vegetables according to the characters, first is eggplant, and then that was Sloane said that, and then Rowan disagrees and says celery is the worst.
Right. Okay, thank you. I was just like, I like both of those.
I also like both of them.
Yes.
And I do not find them the worst.
No.
I think like the argument against celery is that it doesn't really bring much to any table other than crunch. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have a ton of flavor. It can be a little bitter sometimes, but I love it covered in peanut butter with
the best.
So good. And then I also like to slice it up and put it in like my salads because it is nice and crunchy. It's super
the texture crisp. Is good.
And it's not offensive in other ways, I don't think, but apparently the chef in the book does not like celery. So. And I do like eggplant, but it has to be cooked well.
It does have to be cooked well.
Because it can go awry.
Right. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I love all types of, I like Japanese eggplants, regular eggplants, it's all very good. So
I like eggplant parmesan the most, which again, those frying saves all things. So
I had a Hmong dish that was all eggplant. It was the spiciest shit I've ever eaten in my life. But it was just on a bed of rice and I could barely get through it. But the flavor of it was just so fucking delicious. And it was all eggplant, which is like, I don't know, seasonings of some sort. But it was, it was good.
Nice.
But yeah, that's all to say, guys, for this episode. We read Butcher and Blackbird by Bryn Weaver. This one was narrated. Well, I guess there weren't any other ones, but this narrated by Lucy Rivers and Joe Arden. Now, I know Kalina read this book, but she also just listened to it. And can I just preface that this is the fucking best narration story
absolutely the best. And I have 800 audiobooks in my collection. And now I haven't listened to all of them, but this is still the best. If somebody came to me wanting to get into audiobooks and I knew that they'd be okay with this book, because this book's not for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I would tell them to start here because this is so fucking well done. This is the epitome of a dual narrator.
Oh, yes.
Like where whoever edited it, whoever was in charge of the audio on this fucking nailed the back and forth dialogue bits, because I don't think they probably actually recorded together.
Oh, no, you could tell. At least I can tell. I could tell by the sound.
But they still they overlap the tracks in certain places so that it sounds so fucking good. And it really does sound like that back and forth dialogue between the characters. And instead of where sometimes they'll have two narrators, but they'll have one, the male narrator will read the entire male character episode or chapters, like the whole chapter. So even if in the chapter he's like, and then
the female talks.
The female character said blah 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 blah,
he male just makes still his voice really high and
will still, you know, the male narrator will still read all those parts and then the female the other parts, right? But in this new dual narration, they have the opposite narrator come in and voice those sections of dialogue. So it really does create that back and forth. And you only have the one voice for each character. It's so fucking well done.
It is. So it's funny that you said that this would be the one that you would recommend to people, because I asked my girlfriend Peggy if she'd read it yet. And she's like, she hasn't yet. And I said, I would recommend it on Audible. And she's like, I don't listen to Audible. I'm like, well, do it.
Do it for this one.
Just if you have to do a trial or whatever it is, fucking listen to this book. Get it on Libby, whatever it is you could do.
Yeah. I will also say that having read this book first, there's a lot of times that I will read and listen to a book, maybe not at the same time, or I'll listen to one, love it so much and go get the audio of it, or I'll read a book, love it so much and go get the audio. So I'll go back and forth, no problem. Whatever. I think I just said the same thing twice, but you know what I meant. I didn't read, I was definitely psyched to hear Joe Arden do the sexy Irish, faint Irish accent of Jesus Rowan. Christ. And I was just so stoked to hear that, because I was already, while reading the book, was just like,
yeah,
he's Irish too? Fuck off. This is the best character ever written.
Oh my God, it's so good.
And so then getting to hear it, I was really excited for. The piece that I didn't realize, and I had never really noticed myself messing it up before.
Oh.
Lucy Rivers' reading of Sloane was so much more emotional and empathetic than my internal voice for her was when reading the book. It changed the character fucking monumentally. I liked her already when I read it, but I read her with a much harsher, even her internal dialogue, a lot harsher snark and jaded in a way that I interpreted from the way she came off in that first scene in particular.
Yeah, she's a sassy character.
She's a sassy fucking bitch, but I took that, and that was the way her internal monologue sounded too to me for the whole book. But Lucy did this amazing job of breaking down Sloane's
vulnerable, she made her emotional.
Yes. And really highlighting that she is the way she is externally because of how afraid and vulnerable she is internally, and how she has to protect that from this world that has done so much damage to her.
Right.
And so I was like, there was one section, I think it's before the gala, where she's getting dressed, in the gown and stuff, and Lark's on her computer talking to her, and then she just starts internally, like, spiraling, like, what if, what if, what if, what if? And the voice that Lucy did for her and for that was, like, spot on my internal fucking voice, and I was like, oh my god, I just hadn't realized, like, you can really change a character by the way, like, narrators can fucking,
oh yeah,
just carry these stories in a way that you don't. It's hard to describe. I don't think I'm even doing it justice to how completely it just blew me away hearing her.
Yeah. No, I think you're explaining it really good, but you can't really experience it until you listen to it for yourself. And I think you get that extra perspective if you read it. I didn't read this book. I just listened to it. And I'm glad I did. But I think that your, even just your attempt to explain it is enticing enough for people to go in there and listen to it. It's so good. I mean, like, she is real sassy, but she is also, like, she's got trauma. And you could hear it in the voice.
Buckets, you know, of trauma.
Buckets of trauma. You know.
They're dump trucks of trauma behind her everywhere she goes.
But Lucy does such a great job emoting all of those different aspects of her, of her emotions. And it just jumps out at you in your earballs. So.
It's so good.
It's really good. Yeah.
This is the best I've done in a long time. What? I'm not going to do much of a Clips Notes, honestly, because all I want to say is everyone should read it. And I have so much to talk about with this book that I think a lot of it will come out as we talk.
Sure.
But basic story, real quick, Sloane, forgot her last name already, doesn't matter. She's Sloane, also Weaver. Known as Blackbird.
Isn't it? No, no, it's not. Because she's Orb Weaver. In the beginning, because she tried to lie about it.
Well, Orb Weaver's her serial killer name.
Orb Weaver's her serial killer. Okay, then. Okay, never mind.
He's Roan Cain. She's Sloane. Fuck.
He calls her by her last name sometimes.
He
usually calls her Blackbird, but I don't remember. Either way.
I can't. It doesn't matter. Anyway, it's whatever. Doesn't matter. So she, she is a serial killer who kills bad serial killers or rapists or, you know, like people who do bad things serially and aren't going to get justice through the law. So she kills them. She's trapped in a cage in Louisiana in the summer because she just killed a guy, and through a freak series of fates, she like fell into this cage and he managed to get the door shut and locked after she had stabbed him. So he dies on the floor outside the cage with the key, and she's stuck in the cage.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh my God, I'm going to die in this fucking cage next to this dead body that I killed.
3 days.
3 days she's stuck inside there. And then all of a sudden, somebody walks into this, you know, this murder hut in the bayous, practically. I don't know exactly where, but whatever. And he's like, hey, what's up? And it's Rowan. And he, you know, he happens to also be a serial killer who was on his way to kill the same dude and finds her trapped in this cage. So he, you know, sets her free. He's immediately like, just like, damn, this woman's hot. And she's obviously cool because she kills bad people like I kill bad people.
Even though she looks like a fucking wreck after 3 days of being tied to a dead body and...
3 days in the Louisiana heat, in a cage you wouldn't be in good shape. So they, you know, they go out to lunch and they start talking, and he is infatuated from the beginning. They kind of acknowledge who each other is.
Yeah.
They've heard each other. You know, he's the butcher of Boston and she's the orb weaver and whatever. So they've heard each other's story,
like hardcore.
Yeah, they know what each other does, whatever. And he's like, we should do this every year. We should have a game.
A competition. And
so mostly he just doesn't want her to go. Like, he doesn't want her to leave. He can tell she's skittish. She's trying to leave anyway. She doesn't understand why he's even, like, helping her. But he gets her out of the cage and is feeding her lunch. Mm-hmm. And so that starts off what becomes an annual tradition. They meet somewhere in the country and find a serial killer. And whoever finds him first and kills him first wins. And at the end, they get to go after this really elusive serial killer that nobody knows about in the forest somewhere, some U.S. forest. But meanwhile, he's falling head over heels in love with her, and he's just trying to figure out how he can, like, slow play this whole fucking scenario into her acknowledging that she probably is in love with him, too.
And they slow play it. Like, oh, it's
we're talking
years.
4 years.
Years, yeah.
Years. So that, you know, so every year they meet up and do one of these, and like one of them, he like kind of loses control and ends up killing the guy at the next one. He almost like, well, she almost got injured at the first one, and the next one, he he ends up drugged and accidentally eating human beings at a cannibal's house.
Oh my god, I get that entire scene. Oh shit.
And then she kills the guy there, and then in the third one, she is really seriously injured. The killer almost gets her. Yeah. And then like Rowan loses his shit because she's like her shoulders dislocated and her mm-hmm. face is black and blue. But that is the impetus where after like 3 years of this, he just like, I can't lose you, Sloan. And so he acknowledges what he's got going on. She's right there with him. Mm-hmm. And from then on, they are happy and having sex
together.
And then there's one more like at the end where a serial killer shows up and almost kills them again, and then they, you know, she has to save his life again, you know, blah blah blah. So
hold on. What? I just had a thought. The very end chapter, you said there was an extra thing that you had to read because it's not in the Audible. That's not about the new guy who's going to go after his brother.
No.
Okay. It is about them.
It is just about them. It's not like a preview of the next book anything. It is just a bonus chapter about Sloan and Rowan. And it is not in the Audible. And then I had a moment of panic where I thought my brain had constructed an entire chapter. Because I read
You're
it.
Like, oh, I love this so much. I made my own story.
And then, yeah, so I read it first. And it has this chapter at the end, which is really cute and fun. And we'll talk about it in a bit. And then I was listening to the audio when I finished it today. And that chapter wasn't there. And I was like, mm-mm. Did I make this up? Did my brain out of whole cloth create a fucking entire epilogue that does not exist? And then I was like, what if it was a different book and I transposed it into this book? And so then I got really weird because I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
I didn't know what my brain had done. So I, of course, buy the ebook of book.
We have to solve the problem, guys.
Even though I already have the audio and I already read the ebook from the library, I didn't, but I was like, well, I can't get it back tonight and I need it. So I bought it real fast and then I went and saw, yes, there is a bonus chapter that is just in the ebook, not in the audio. Don't know why, but there you go, people.
Yes, you get now you got to consume it both ways, because if you want the fucking accents and the emotions that these brilliant fucking narrators are giving you, then you have to listen to it. But if you want the bonus story, then you have to read it too. So
you have to do both.
It's worth it, I think.
I mean, usually you get a deal if you buy them both through Amazon. They like knock off like a certain percentage of the audiobook.
Yeah.
But they don't do it the other way, guys. Don't buy the audiobook first. They will not give you a discount on the ebook. If you buy the ebook first, you get a significant discount on the audiobook. Fuck off. Why? I don't understand. But trust me, I looked and I was like, you mean I don't get this for cheaper because I already own the audio? Fuck off. Anyway, so yes, what else? The whole book. So that's the book. I mean, that's it's two serial killers falling in love.
Yes.
It's a dark romantic comedy.
Yes.
So it has super dark themes.
You have to listen to the warnings in the beginning of the book. There's a whole slew of trigger warnings that they're like, if you are against cannibalism and
accidental cannibalism.
There was like cock warming and like anal.
Which I did not know what that was.
I didn't either. I even fucking wrote it down.
And then I listened. I read them and then I read the book and I didn't see anything that I thought was cock warming. And then I found it again when I was listening to the audiobook. I was like, oh, right. I never did figure out what that was in the book. And so I listened again and I was like, nope. I think I know what it is. I figured it out. I think it's when they fall asleep, he tries to fall asleep with his dick in her.
He wouldn't let her move. He just stayed there. Yeah.
I think that must be cock warming, but that is the weirdest title or like description of that I've ever heard.
Also, I mean, how realistic is that? Because I mean, we've talked about that before where we're just like, just stay inside after the sex act is done. Let's just
love that idea.
I personally do too. But as a starts to go down to normal size, it just slides out.
It just falls out.
Just
No, I know. She's like, I think it's been like 20 minutes and he's still rock hard inside her. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I didn't read a paranormal book. Who is this magic man?
I know. I was thinking that too. Well, like the first sex, the first time they have sex, she's okay. She's got like a broken arm. She's just like, he's just like, I can't. She
a
wants
dislocated
to
shoulder.
A dislocated
Let's take
shoulder.
The pain from a just regular broken arm and up it to your entire, because it's not just your arm now. That's your entire torso is in pain.
And his brother is, one of his brothers is a doctor. So they're all like, you know, whatever. But she's in the bathtub and she's like, come on and do me. And he's like, no, you're injured. And she's like, touch my pussy. And he's like, okay, let's do this. But he lasts, like, it's hours. You know that this is like hours that he's just like, okay. And he's not relenting. And then he just like totally pulls on the, I mean, he's really masculine in this, or not, well, he's masculine, but like really dominant in this scene.
Oh, he's definitely a dom. Really? In all of their sex. He tells her what all to do, sex. All of it.
Yeah.
He's giving her orders. And it's a very sub-dom relationship. But I was thinking about that too, and I thought that they kind of skirted it a little bit, because a good chunk of the scene is just him pleasuring her, so they don't have to have him be like that's paranormally true. Long-lasting or right. like unnaturally mad. Yeah, like
she gets to go first
because he's like that's his focus, and then he finally fucks her and he comes, I'd say, in a normal amount of time.
I would say too. Yeah
And then he goes right back to pleasuring her, like it's not, and like he doesn't, so I think he uses that as his recovery time.
Yeah, he does go back to pleasuring her, and then he does end up a
they
little
still
while longer
have sex for multiple hours while her shoulders,
she's injured.
Well, it's been put back in, it's not still dislocated, it's but been it's been removed by a doctor, so it is back in. But they, like, the whole day was traumatic. Like, they almost got killed by a serial killer, and then they had to kill him and burn his house down and escape and drive from Kansas to Nebraska. I know they ended up in Nebraska, but I don't remember where the killer at Texas. I think they had to go from Texas to Nebraska, which is a couple of states, people. Depending on where and where you are. Texas is huge.
It's a long drive. Let's
it
just
could
say
have
that.
Been a fucking long drive. And then wait on his brother to show up, fix her shoulder. And then they decide, let's spend the whole night fucking.
Just
which I,
fucking.
I'm pro fucking.
I mean,
just personally would have been like, I'm not doing anything, bitch.
I mean, she really, she didn't do much. The only other thing she did was he had her turn around when he pulled out her dildo. And
yes, that was
on
in
her.
The second
so she had
scene.
To hold her but to hold herself up.
They didn't read, like, it's not read out, but it's described in the end. Like, she does give him a blowjob in it, and this, like, there's a couple of things that happen that I just lead me to believe she was more active than a person with a dislocated shoulder should be.
I think so.
In the first 24 hours of their dislocation.
Yes. Now, can I say, though,
yes.
listening to Joe do Rowan's voice while he's, well, during all of their intimate scenes. Okay, I don't like noise and talking during sex. Just
but if it's
generally,
if it's Joe doing Rowan, yeah, you can talk to me the whole fucking time, buddy.
You could say whatever the fuck you want. Like, and he was like, he was aggressive in a loving way. You know what I mean? Just the
way
dom
more,
nature
yes.
of us.
It is,
you know?
Dumb, but it's not
demeaning.
It's not demeaning. There's
it's
no,
not abusive.
Like, yeah, it's not abusive. It's not like, shut the fuck up and do what I say. It's more, are you going to be a brat or are you going to listen to what I say? Like, and I will punish you if you're a brat.
So it's the terminologies that he used and like the way he fucking read. Look, I just look, Aiden Snow, I love you. I'm sorry, but you're replaced by Joe Arden for me, at least for Rowan. Because Irish accents, one, that's like the killer for me. Just
all
point blank.
Three of these books are going to be Irish men.
Just him reading Irish people.
She had better have books. Him do all fucking three of these
I
books.
Fucking hope she does. I mean, like, he did great doing both his brothers, you know, when he was talking. Yeah. And it was so good, too, because you could tell the difference when they were having the bantering between them two. Between the three of them, you could tell which one was which. Which was just, it's just talent.
How can you
it's
do
so
three
good.
different Irish male accents?
Exactly.
I can't do one. Because he does English, like American yep. accent. Like, I mean.
He did Southern.
I don't know what he is. He could be Irish for all we know.
Yeah. As good as he does that accent. And he did English for one of them, too.
Yes. The cannibal guy was British. The cannibal
was, yeah. But anyway, I just want to say that I think after listening to this, I am all about the hardcore talking, if you're going to talk to me like that. Because that was just fucking juicy. Was so good. And
it
I will
was
take
so
it.
Good. Oh my God. I actually was a little nervous again because I, you know, because I read it first and I knew how aggressive these scenes were. I was like, scenes are, it's porn. These scenes are porn. These are not some of our more like romantic versions of sex. This is fucking porn.
Yep.
And I was like, I loved reading it. Mm-hmm. I was like, is this gonna be awkward listening to? Because especially I was at work. I was sitting at work the first time that came on and I was like, all right, let's see how this goes.
Yeah, I do not recommend this driving or working, guys. Please pull over. Find a safe spot.
And I sat there today and I was like, oh no, it's so good. It's so well done. I love her voice for it too, because like her complete, here's one of the things that I do appreciate, and I don't know if it's realistic because obviously I can't do it from a male perspective, but from a female perspective, like a couple of different times he would engage her in like the beginnings, kind of like the foreplay of an act. He would do something pretty ridiculous, like just put his dick in her and then not move.
Yes.
And then ask her serious questions and make her talk. She's like, my brain's not working. Yes. And that's exactly how I, like, there's definitely, like, we joke a lot about how men stop thinking with their heads and start thinking with their dicks as soon as their dicks get involved, right? But that's 100% realistic to me. Like, absolutely. If I am starting to get stimulated, like, you can't ask me serious questions. No. I can't talk. What?
Well, and if you're going to put a dick in me and not do anything with it.
And then, tell me to describe the dessert I'm eating. I don't fucking know.
I don't think so.
I'm just going to be like, but, my brain, what? All the blood's somewhere else, buddy. I got nothing going on.
That was
in the
restaurant scene, wasn't it?
Yes, that was the restaurant one. But her breathy, confused, the way Lucy does, slow, it's confused, breathy, like, what?
Yes, it's good.
So fucking perfect for those
fucking
scenes.
Perfect.
She's always so like, this is like great, and she's into it, and she loves it, but she's also just like, what is he talking about? Why is he making me tell him about things while I'm busy?
He gives her an entire list of things that he's going to do to her and where he's going to do it and how he's going to do it. And he fucking executes every single one. I was curious about the restaurant one and I was just like, oh, he gets his own restaurant. Now I understand. So he christens it.
Well, they're both his own restaurants.
I guess that is very
but
true.
But that one
they
at least isn't open, so he
own.
Can go fuck her in it before it opens without, like, worrying about cleaning, I guess. I mean,
well,
he'll have to clean
I mean,
it, but
they did it in the window, with the windows just right there.
They did.
So people were definitely walking by, but I don't think anybody saw them. But oh my God, everything about this, it was written so well. And they had to have practiced this, right? The narrators? Like, even though they didn't record it together, there had to be some type of like...
Well, they might have done it where they sent chapters back and forth.
Okay.
I only know that because of... So the Julia Whelan book, Thank You for Listening, like she was a narrator and then wrote the book about narrators falling in love, right? Mm-hmm. I've talked about it a couple times on the podcast. Yeah. In it, she and her co-narrator are doing that, where they are recording chapters and then sending them to each other so they can kind of play off of each other. It sounds like a dual narration where they are played off of each other that way. I don't think they would have known exactly how the edits would come together because the edits really do overlap.
Oh, they're perfect.
But that would be my guess for how they did it. It's that or it's recording simultaneously, which, it didn't sound like it was.
No,
so.
You could tell that it's not the cuts, or at least I can hear it. But
well, and a couple of the things, like I think his laugh was the same laugh recorded.
It was the exact
same one. And then inserted multiple times.
The entire time.
Yeah. Every time he laughed, they just took like one of his laughs. Yeah. Yes. It's not, he didn't laugh like that 50 times on cue. They just picked one and that became the laugh for the book.
Unless he's like really good at reiterating the same exact laugh the entire time. Yeah, I'm like,
sorry, that's definitely the same one.
Exactly the same. But yeah, I mean, they even had like mirrors in this one too. Like, I think, didn't we, one of our most recent books, we had mirrors. Didn't they have a mirror scene in this? I don't know.
No.
I just put in my notes, okay, mirrors are fun.
Oh. We had a mirror scene in the
vampire
one
book.
Two
books ago. No, I
why Sex and the Single Vamp.
Yeah. They had a mirrors, but something else was.
Was there a mirror in this one?
It had to have been very slight. I wrote it down and I
should have. Oh. Before, when she's injured, they're back at the house. She's been fixed up and he's getting her ready for the bath. And he's stripping her, but he's keeping his eyes. They're in the bathroom, both looking at the mirror.
The mirror, right.
And he's looking at her eyes in the mirror. He doesn't dip down to look at her body until like she kind of acknowledges and tells him that he can.
Yeah.
So he's keeping his eyes on the mirror, but on her eyes in the mirror and not looking below.
It was sensual. That was a very sensual
fuck. Scene. No way you're getting out of this, buddy, and not fucking
no.
her. Like,
no, sorry.
You're not just going to put me in this bath and then walk the fuck away. I am not.
That is not
that
happening.
Strong. I'm not that strong. I think, okay, so we've talked a lot and we'll definitely talk more about sex because we got more things to say. But I think one of the things that I wanted to talk about for this book that is kind of, you know, sometimes in discussion of romance and especially the darker romance, this one's not, you know, still definitely comedic. So it's a dark comedy, not full-blown dark romance. Uh-huh. But, you know, the question is often, especially like men, if men read them or hear about them, they're like, but why, like, if this is what you really like what, like, how can men live up to this? How can, you know, like, it makes you sound kind of crazy because you're like, this serial killer is so good.
Yeah.
And I don't really believe that, right?
No.
Obviously, these aren't real fucking people. These are fucking characters. I don't believe there is an altruistic serial killer out there killing other fucking serial killers.
No.
Because if you're the kind of person that can do multiple murders, you're fucking screws you loose, right?
Yes.
You're not.
You're also a psychopath. Like,
you're
sorry.
A psychopath. You don't have the empathy these characters
have. You don't
have
morals. It's not.
Yeah, you're fucked up, right? Okay, so it's not about that, but is about the way these two characters were written as perfect foils for each other and knowing each other, mostly him in particular, Rowan, from the minute he fucking laid eyes on Sloane.
Yeah.
He, like, saw her inside and out and identified who she was, who they could be together, who he could be for her. And he didn't stray one iota for the whole fucking book. Like, he identified she was going to struggle with relationships and she was going to be a flight risk and she was wary and nervous and this was not going to be easy. And then he spent 3 years seeing her once a year and texting with her in order to earn her trust, then her, you know, affection, and then her love very slowly. In the most romantic fucking way for serial killers to ever do it.
I mean, they're serial killers. You have to think about that. Yes. Like, how many, just that part of it in itself is fairy tale.
It's so fairy tale.
Somebody waiting that long. Like, how many men would actually wait for that? Is she actually worth
celibate
waiting?
Celibate the entire time.
Yes.
Both parties.
Both of them. Neither one of them slept with anybody else since they'd met each other.
Since they had an accidental meeting and ate some ribs together in Louisiana once. And then they didn't spend years just obsessing over, well, him obsessing over her and her slowly opening her heart to him.
Yeah, she was in denial. And I mean, she'd had lots of emotional things that she had gone through, but eventually she did. She was like, okay, let's do this.
I know. And so that's what we love. Like, that's the fucking bit about this story that hangs me every time and gets me, because he so slowly approached her in every scene, in every instance. He like gave her all of these opportunities to like see him for who he is and like, you know, become comfortable with him just being around. He kept, like, there's a one scene where she shows up at his restaurant in between I think in between episodes one and two. Not episodes, but murders one and two, I think.
Yeah, I think so. It was around two. It was either before or after.
It was before, because then the gala was after.
Okay.
Right. And so because they know who they are. They didn't lie about their identities, which I also thought was super fucking crazy that these two just walk around telling each other, like telling everyone they meet, they are Sloane and Rowan. And I'm like,
yeah.
You're serial killers. You should keep that quiet.
That's like almost superhero status, but on the reverse.
You should have a pseudonym or something. Anyway. And she goes to his restaurant and is like, doesn't tell him she's in town, doesn't tell him that she's in Boston. She's just, and she's hacked into his system enough to know that he would be working that day, but she's still like, I'm not going to tell him. She just goes to the restaurant and eats her lunch and she's trying to leave. And then he comes out and, like, sees her, right? And he, like, obviously wants her to stay. He tries to get her to stay. She doesn't. She bolts. Everything, you know, kind of. Like, there's a lot of other things happen. Like, a lot is going on all at
there's
once.
There's a ton of people there. She sees Lachlan.
It's Lachlan's birthday party. So there's people and friends, and people are saying hi to Rowan. And it's not. He definitely comes off as more popular and busy and all this. And she just wants to get out of there. And instead of just, like, chasing her, because that's not going to help. That doesn't work, right? He does. Fly to Raleigh. That's where she is, right?
Yep.
And he spends like a week buying her groceries. Yes, stalking her from across the street, buying her groceries and sending them with a little neighbor kid to her door, and then over the phone cooking with her, walking her step by step through each meal, but not letting her know that he's physically there.
Actually, they're watching her and like watching her peek out the door to see when the next deliveries come. I waited for the moment that she heard sirens through his phone.
Right.
And they were like, those are the same sirens. Wait, are you where?
Right.
That would have been awesome.
And I mean, in other contexts, that behavior's the worst. That is definitely serial killer stalker behavior. Well, guess what? He's a serial killer stalker. He doesn't know any better.
There's a safety element in these fantasies that allow us to have these emotions towards these type of men that are written for us, right?
Yeah.
Like, that is also a reason why we get into these books. Like you just said, in real life, probably no. Probably I would not fall in love with a serial killer. Like,
hard pass. I think every instinct in my body would be like, that's fucking nuts.
But these characters are written in a way for us to fall in love with them in a safe space, and they're given to us in this manner. Also, it's just unrealistic. You can't, that's not really.
This is not how humans are.
No. So why do we
like they are both broken people?
Yeah.
Finding each other doesn't fix these kind of people. But in this book, it does. And that's fine. It can in this book. In reality, no, these two people are broken fucks. They're not going to be fixed by meeting each other.
Right. And that's the things that, I mean, like if they're going to question why we read these kind of books or aren't into these kind of men, it's because, well, because they're not real, even though it's contemporary. It's like, we can fantasize about these
100%
type of men that don't, I guess, truly exist in the real world.
No.
And if they do, we don't know them.
I haven't fucking met one.
You know?
If any of them are on Hinge, I'd like to find you. Sorry. I mean, not this exact guy.
You know, sans
not
the serial killer part.
The killing. But I'm not on board.
No, that part's not cool.
That's a bridge too far in moral gray world.
In the context of a rom-com, dark comedy, you know, romantic novel, then yes, I'll take it. Bonus the Irish accent.
Oh, super big bonus. And the chef.
Fucking A.
And the tattoos. And the muscles. Ooh. And the scars.
Everything.
And
just the way. Oh, yeah, that's right. He has a scar on his.
Well, he has the lip scar.
Lip scar, yeah.
But he also just has general scars.
Yeah, well, you know, he has to defend himself a lot for murdering.
He grew up with an abusive father.
Also, that
he murdered.
I'd forgotten about that. I love the bond between the brothers. I think that is.
It's the best. Okay. It's the fucking best.
What's the little brother's name?
Fionn.
Is that a F?
It's an F. Yeah.
Okay. Fionn. I couldn't tell if it was an F or a TH.
Ah, yeah. You'd have to see it spelled,
yes.
But it's Fionn.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because sometimes I heard both. And I just
that's
tell
actually
what it
why I actually struggled after listening to it, because it sounded like it might have been the speed at which we listened, but it sounded like he said Rowan the whole book instead of Rowan, like R-O-A-N instead of R-O-W-A-N.
Oh, right? I see what you're saying.
Like reading it, I got it. Like it didn't.
Yeah.
Like I could see it. And so I knew what his name was the whole time I read it. But then I kept calling him Rowan.
R-O-A-N.
Because that's what I thought I was hearing in the audiobook. Because the accent and the speed. Right. Listening at speed.
Yeah, we do listen to it really fast.
It needs to be.
Was there any part in this book that was the most squeamish for you? Because it gets into details for some of the murders.
I think the scariest bit was the chainsaw murder dude. I mean, because that was like, they almost died. Like,
oh, yeah.
They were on the edge there. The squeamish. I don't like cannibalism. I think the worst was at the end where David was slicing up Rowan's arm.
That was bad.
Because actually having him it done while you're alive also feels like not cool. Not cool.
No.
Man.
Yeah, that one made you definitely get that shiver up your body. Like, it's just, that one was pretty bad. No, the part that made me scream was involved David as well.
The ice cream bit.
when Rowan comes to after drinking the wine and then like falling over, and she's like, God damn it, didn't you know? Like, she's just annoyed by him. And so he comes to, and then she's like, yeah, they're just, David's just in the kitchen just enjoying chewing on some flesh there.
Sausage.
And just like the way that they were like, yeah, sausage. And how they were explaining it and just talking about it back and forth. They've got some wonderful banter in this book. It's just
so good.
You have to listen to it.
I think the cannibalism is gross. The fact that Rowan accidentally eats people is upsetting. Yeah. And I would not be okay with that. I honestly think the fact that they can't get over the ice cream was funnier to me than anything. Because that wasn't that bad. Like, I don't want to eat. It was semen ice cream, guys. It was labeled cookies and cream. And like, no, our people didn't eat it. They just found. So in one of the serial killers, he's a cannibal. They go to kill him. He almost gets Rowan, right? He drugs them, but she knows better and she doesn't drink because she knows who she's up against. And Rowan didn't do his research.
I thought that was so interesting. But yes,
he was just following her around because that's all he likes the game is to follow her. He doesn't really care about the game.
Their date. Yes, that's right. So he had no idea who this guy was. She'd already done the research. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you'd think he would still have tried a little harder, but he didn't. So anyway, he gets himself into a bad position where he gets drugged, fed people meat, raw people meat in a salad niçoise, and then he passes out, and then they wake up. This guy, the serial killer, had a supposedly, quote unquote, jumping around, spoiler for the end, not lobotomized, but everyone thought he had been lobotomized, like Butler. So his name's David. And after she kills the killer and is stringing up his bits and bobs in her little web thing, and Rowan comes to, Sloane is like, you got to go see in the kitchen. David's in there just eating meat.
Yeah, just slurping on pieces of meat.
And so she's grossed out because they know it's people. They don't know that he knows, like, because they think he's lobotomized. So they just assume he's dumb, you know, because his brain's been cut in half. And then they go in there and he's eating a bowl of ice cream or a container of ice cream. And she reads the ingredients and it says on it that it is semen milked from a very specific time. And that's what's in the ice cream. God. And so then they're both like, it's a running joke for the rest of the book and they can't eat ice cream ever again. And I was like, that isn't like, I don't want to eat that and I don't want to watch somebody eat it. But that's the least offensive of all the shit that happened. I
mean, out of everything, semen gets consumed other ways, but consensually. And
yeah, I mean, if we were like, there's a semen eating scene later in the book.
Right.
And there's one that's pretty graphic.
Yes, where he spits in her mouth.
He spits the combo of their orgasm from her into her mouth. Yeah. So I'm like, are you guys still upset about the whole cookies and cream ice cream? Because that shit just happened.
Yeah. I would have to say that's probably my least favorite of all of their antics was
That specific scene. I'd have been like, Nope.
Like, I don't even do it when it's a regular blowjob. Like, you know, and it's a natural thing to do it. Like, you swallow, right? I don't even do that. So to then open my mouth after it's been regurgitated, I guess. And then to swallow it afterwards, not cool. Like, I'm just not into that. Like, that's the part I'm not.
That was your line in the sand.
Yes, that's where I draw the line.
That's funny.
I mean, I was like, okay.
They that happened. Everything in this book.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good.
So, yeah. But there's definitely parts that are squeamish. There's definitely parts where, like, eyeballs get popped out a lot.
Yeah.
Bad things happen. Oh, we haven't even talked about any of the piercing pits.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So she's got piercings. Like, I would say extreme piercings. Not extreme, like, in a bad way, but, like, a lot of those I had never heard of.
Nope.
And had to do the Googling.
Had to look them up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's got both nipples, the triangle and the clitoris. Two or three labial ones, like,
yeah, I think,
running
I
down
think
the
so.
Side, like a labial mm-hmm. ladder. And then the fourchette, which is at the back of the vagina.
Yeah, the back. Yeah. Like inside the back.
Inside the back.
It's in the back of the plane, guys. Like,
and he is so funny when he realizes. Because the first he sees the two nipple ones. And like early on in the book, in the very beginning, when he saves her from the cage, she takes a quick shower and then has to put on that guy's clothes. Like not yeah. the dead body's clothes, but just clothes he had in the house. You know, so she's wearing like a really oversized t-shirt and ridiculous jeans because she's a small 23-year-old mm-hmm. woman and she's in some big guy's clothes. And he can tell she doesn't have a bra on, right? So his whole, like, his inner dialogue for the next chapter is just like, no bra, no bra, no bra, no
yep,
bra.
That's all. It's just no bra, no bra,
no bra,
no bra,
no bra, no bra. And he's like, don't keep saying that in your head. You have to look somewhere else. But he can't, yes. like, keep his eyes off. And then, like, 3 years later, after her shoulder is injured and he's trying to help her they're still on the drive. They haven't made it to his brother's house. And she has to stop at a rest stop for a bathroom. And he's trying to, like, she's covered in blood. And she looks mm-hmm. like she's been kicked in the face because she's been kicked in the face. Right. And so he's trying to, like, get her a hat and some glasses and cover up, you know, with a shirt. So no one's like, why is this woman walking around bloody? He's buttoning up the shirt and he realizes he can see your nipples again.
Yep.
And they're pierced mm-hmm. with a little heart around them and then a barbell through them. Mm-hmm. And so now
and
he's like
crazy.
He loses the thread for the rest of the drive because he yes. cannot do anything but think about pierced nipples. And then he finally gets her into the bath. Everything's fine. She's healed. Like, she's fixed up. She's not healing or anything, but she's fixed up. And he's trying to help her shower at the end of the day. And he's like, look, you have to just get in this tub because I can't look at you. I have been waiting nope. 4 years to touch you and I can't yep. deal with this. And your nipples are pierced. And she's like, wait a second. And she puts
takes his hand. Oh, that's when he's like, get out of the fucking tub now.
Right. Because a lot of other things are pierced.
Yeah. He feels all of it down there in the fun zone. Yeah. Oh, man. I cannot imagine all of those. I mean, like, to each their own, obviously. They're there for reasons. But that's a lot of metal to have to.
I also struggle with the concept and just how difficult vaginas are generally. Mm-hmm. I don't want to put extra things around there that I now have to be like extra careful about.
Sure.
Like yeah, just yeah. I get into fights with my tampons like monthly. Now imagine there's metal down there that could catch. Like now I'm really gonna have issues. Like
yes.
the tampon and I already are fucking enemies. I just can't deal with more work.
It's gonna be too much. Yeah. But so, just like the picturing it and the thought of it, it's pretty hot. Like,
oh, it's
like
sexy as
her description of yes, of it. For myself, no way. I don't think I could do it either. But mm-mm. it just goes
not,
along with.
If it could be super temporary, like, I mean, like obviously you can. Yeah, there you go. Like a clip on. Like something I could like experience. without pain or suffering, and then remove as soon permanent. As I wanted it. And then all, I mean, I know you can't. You can always take them out. It's not permanent. But
what? But the holes sometimes don't heal. So in a sense, they are sort of permanent. Sometimes they don't heal.
Very true. But it still won't be like the permanent metal thing.
The metal won't always be in there, right? Right.
True. You're correct. So. But actually, I think this is a good time to do the fun fuck fact then, yeah. Which is all about genital piercings. Mm-hmm. So I have one article that's just kind of a quick overview for those of us who are like the least informed about genital piercings. It's called We Ask People with Genital Piercings, Do They Hurt? It's by Ariel Richards on the Vice.com website. And this is from September 20th of 2022. And it's just a real quick primer about mostly vertical clitoral hood piercings and the Prince Albert on the penis. So they ask, you know, like 4 men and 4 women about their genital piercings and just kind of discuss them. So I'll put that up just for a quick overview of what genital piercings are like and the people who have them, like what they do for them or yeah. don't do and like how they're good or not good. But then I think a much more interesting article and then one that takes us back into the story, it's on a website called dazeddigital.com, and it is How People Are Using Genital Piercings to Affirm Their Gender. It's by Kitty Doherty, and it's from September 14th of 2023. And I just wanted to read a couple bits out of it. So I know our book doesn't have trans people in the book, but this article is about how many trans people find a profound sense of healing through genital biohacking with piercings, that is a sense of healing that is difficult to find through other means. Like the way they structured yeah. that sentence actually makes the sentence difficult to read. But so then in this article, they talk with some trans and non-conforming, but non-binary people about the use of genital modifications, genital piercings to help them like pick, you know, like either disassociate from a past gender or like really into that binary, that non-binary space, or reaffirm their body once they go through like gender surgery. So mm-hmm. one of them in particular I wanted to read is about... So this one particular person is talking and says that this is many trans people, including Lohide, find a profound sense of healing through genital biohacking with piercings that are difficult to find elsewhere. This is more, again, that same sentence is structured. Anyway, this is more than catharsis, especially in a world where health services still make the trans community wait years for life-saving care. And then the quote is from this person, I am a survivor of childhood sexual assault and having struggled with trauma and insecurities around my genitals since then. Living with that sort of trauma, my body always felt wrong. Getting that piercing allowed me to reclaim my body. So Sloan mentions in the book when he starts asking her about all the piercings, because he sees them, he demands that she, you know, get on the bed, spread herself and show him
yeah.
all of her piercings, which she wants to do. That's why she put his hand there, right? This is not,
yeah.
you know I say right, the right. word demand, but it's in a loving way. And then he asks her about each one, like, when did you get them and why, you know? And so the first one is the clitoral hood, the triangle. Mm-hmm. And it's because it was her second piercing. She got her belly button done first, and it was like around 18, I think she said. And as we kind of alluded to, she had been the survivor of did we say that on the podcast?
Yeah.
We did. We have said it.
Yeah.
So the high school she and Lark, her best friend, were at, had a sexual predator for a teacher. He was mm-hmm. definitely molesting and raping the girls. And she was taking it at first. No, like she was just taking it and wasn't doing anything about it. But then when he started it on Lark, she couldn't accept that. So she killed him. And Lark comes from a very rich, powerful family, as it's implied.
Yeah.
And so they helped her like cover up the killing and like survive. And that was the beginning of her serial yes. killerness, right?
That was her very first one.
But then she goes out at 18 and she gets her clit hood pierced. And it's because she probably had to take back that sexuality from the mm-hmm. sexual abuse she experienced as a young girl. Like mm-hmm. otherwise that part of your body feels, you know, can feel wrong, can feel like disconnected from you, like not a center of pleasure, but of pain. And so part of this genital piercings can be for survivors of trauma and abuse, a way of re-identifying themselves with their bodies and like reclaiming that piece of them for themselves.
Taking that back for them. Yeah.
So, yeah. So we'll put those articles up on Friday so you guys can read them if you're interested. But I thought that was a really fascinating because I hadn't known about the trans community utilizing genital piercings to also like re-identify and like associate themselves with their bodies in a way that they're happy with, that really reaffirms their identities.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad you found that. Yeah, even though we don't have that tie in the book, it's still, there's that connection with Sloan and having that sense for her to reconnect with herself and enjoy, and it's enjoyed.
Yeah. Well, and then she says she got the other ones, the labial ones, because they look like armor to her. So in a way that she's still like, she's still battling and struggling with that prior abuse, and she's putting up armor in her vagina as a way of dealing with it.
Yeah.
And then she finally got the third one, the fourchette, because she wanted it to be pleasurable for a partner. And she's like, I assume it'll be good for a partner. And she got it right before meeting him, meeting Rowan. And so then he was like, well, was it? Did anyone like it? And she's like, oh, I don't know. Like,
I have never no fucked idea.
Anyone but you.
Never got to try it out with anybody.
So he's like the only one who got to experience
crazy even more. Yes.
That piercing.
Yes. Gets to experience all of that. No, he doesn't have any piercings. He's just got tattoos.
He just has tattoos, which I think is a smart choice on the author's part, because I definitely would assume they would all get caught and they'd rip each other up. You can't both have them.
No.
It has to be one partner or the other. You can't. That's definitely how accidents happen.
For sure. And like from personal experience, now none of that stuff had ever got caught inside of me, but Dan had a PA. And he's worn it when we were very young, when we first started dating. He's worn it a couple of times. And I was too in my head every time we were intimate. Every time we fucked, I was like, that thing is going to snag on the inside of me. or it's going to get caught in something, or it's going to fall out and be inside my body forever.
I read about one getting, I think it was a Prince Albert, getting caught on a woman's IUD strings.
Oh, God.
Oh, no. And that is enough to make your entire uterus like shrivel up and cry.
Oh no. Oh God, that just hurt.
I know. I'm literally in pain. Just saying.
God.
I was like, ow. So yeah, there's definitely a fear of that. So I appreciate that they were all on her, because I feel like they could still get caught. There's definitely a way, but it just felt a little bit. And again, yeah, I don't think both partners should have. I say this, and there's definitely people out there who both have.
For sure. But if you think, also considering how rough their sex is, like, he absolutely just he talks to her in a certain manner. And again, this is all consensual. Like, it's all safe. She is totally, they have a safe word. The safe word is psycho, right?
Chainsaw.
Chainsaw. Is that the?
Mm-hmm. It's chainsaw.
I thought, didn't use it in the end? He just kept calling her a psycho at the very end.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, he didn't. Like, I kind of also thought that he should have found a way to fit chainsaw into that sentence.
I thought so, too.
But I know it's a kind of a weird word, and it would have been hard. But because that would have sent a bigger message to her that he was in trouble if he needed to use the word chainsaw. But it wasn't his word. It's her word. He used psycho because he knew it would
trigger her.
Get her to leave. Yes, the fastest. Get her,
yeah. Yes. Okay. But anyway, so we could talk a little bit about our kiss and tell then, which is because there's a scene in the book where she is talking to Lark, I think.
Yeah.
And was this before or after they had sex?
This is before. This is way earlier. This is
the gala, right?
No, it's even before the gala. This is after the first kill, and they're just watching a movie together.
Okay.
Lark and Sloan are watching a movie together.
Lark and Sloan
They're watching a Keanu Reeves movie, and she's just like, I know
about Keanu.
So Lark says that, you know, she's macking on Keanu, you know, in the movie, of course, because she loves him.
Yeah.
And she says, like, what? I'm in a dry spell. She's been on the road.
She's a performer.
She's a singer, but she's been on the road with a musician, with some band or something. And she's like, you'd think being, you know, around all of these musicians, I'd get more action, but they're so emo. I just want a manly man to like throw me around, toss me, manhandle me. All these musicians do is like whine about their fedoras or something like that.
Yes. when all she wants to do is just get fucked. Which, I mean, come on.
Spoiler, she ends up with Lachlan in the next book, so I think she gets pretty well and good fucked.
I'm thrown around so a bit. Lachlan's a bad boy.
Ooh.
Sounds like. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I mean, I guess they all, well, maybe Fionn's not, but.
Well, he's a doctor.
The other two are.
Yeah.
But anyway, we thought it would be fun to tie in some of our own experiences of either being manhandled or how we would like to be, if that hasn't happened yet. There, so I don't remember what the book was called, but it's the one with the girl who's got the four love interest, and one of them is the priest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know which one I'm talking
yeah,
about, right?
It's...
I don't remember the book, what it's called. But there's Obsession. That scene where...
It's called Obsession Mate Games by Kim Lorraine and Meg Ann.
Oh, wait, that's right, Kim, of course. Mm-hmm. But there's that scene where she gets spanked by the priest, mm-hmm. and he, like, just smacks her ass and her pussy lips are sticking out, and so, like, he just keeps smacking her. That, to me, was one of the hottest scenes that I'd ever read. And it was just... And so, like, that type of intimacy where it's a little... where it's naughty and a little kinky, and you are sort of, like, just treated in a way, consensually, that it's not, like, normal that you would be doing in a normal sex act, right? Or even me, like, I love my hair getting pulled.
Oh,
I love
yes.
a little bit of choking. If I was smaller, I think you could, like, pick me up and throw me on the bed and things like that, you know? Like, that is the kind of stuff that I would enjoy, I think,
I
a lot of the time.
I know I enjoy that shit. I do. I love that. I know. And it's just really hot when you're that connected with a person and you can just be like, just a little spanking.
Yeah.
Like, just,
yes.
It is that edge of pain mm-hmm. mixed with the pleasure that is just exciting, right?
Because ultimately, you know, you're safe. Yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah. I would not enjoy it if I didn't know I was safe.
Of course,
and I've
not,
definitely
right.
found, like, there's a line. I was with a partner who wanted, like, put a collar on me, and it wasn't even like a choke collar or anything. Thing, but and I just like instantly froze stiff, and I was like, oh, I don't like this. And so it came off immediately, and it was even just like Velcro, would not have like it
right,
totally
right.
easily removable, not a big deal. But the second it was on my neck, I like was rigid instantly,
yeah,
not okay with that. And you're like, okay, well, there was a line, we discovered a line,
that's
the line,
mm-hmm.
I can't do that. But a little, like just a hand at the neck, totally okay with. Just holding. Don't grab. Don't squish.
Right.
But just hold it. Like,
a little
just,
bit of pressure.
Just
a tiny
holding
bit,
there, like acknowledging that your giant man mm-hmm. hand is on my neck.
Dan likes to, so he, if he puts his hand up against my neck, he lets me apply my own mm-hmm. pressure. Because mm-hmm. then I have that control. And that's
exactly.
what makes it comfortable. I like that. But hair, fucking pull it.
Pull it.
I've got so much fucking hair.
My scalp is immune to pain. The amount of hair we both
have.
Have
you seen this fucking hair? I know. Both of us just like manes of hair.
I was at the salon the other day and she found a knot. She could not, like after washing it, she just couldn't get this one knot to completely detangle. And so she thinks she'd get it and then she'd run the comb through and hit it again and it would just snap my head. And she was like apologizing so voraciously. She was just like, I'm so sorry, I keep doing that. And I was like, I literally, it just moves my head. I don't feel it other than that.
Can't. No. And how about you just cut it? Like,
yeah, just take that knot out. It's
just
fine.
Just take it out. And so I have the rest of my hair. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love that. There are times that Dan and I, when we were younger, obviously, where things would get really exciting. And so it was just like, just toss me around, flip me over, and make me go this way and tell me to do that and stuff. Like, I don't particularly like being dominated verbally. Like, I don't want you really, because I don't want to hear you talking most of the time. Like, I just don't want
to. You have to
just shut up.
Like Rowan.
Just like, but this book sort of turned that around in me where I was just like, I will fucking take this. Abso-fucking-lutely, because it was just so beautiful how he, and because he changed the way he obviously spoke because he was in a more intimate scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he was like wanting to fuck her. This, he was all in his emotions for that. So the way he spoke to her was aggressive, maybe
but
not.
Never demeaning.
No, never,
never
demeaning.
So I think we've talked about it a couple times. I know we talked about it with Adi when she was on the podcast, because there's this phrase that is running through the book world because it was used in one of these books, and it's It's a super hot, technically a hot phrase, but it starts out with shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up and take this dick like a good girl. And so then it's been turned into an acronym, and I can't do it without reading it, but it's like STFUATTDLAGG, right? And so people have it on stickers and they have it on everything. And AD did it in her book, but she took away the shut the fuck up.
Yes.
And she put get on your knees. Because that's still dominant. There's still the dominant action. There's still the like verbally explain, like telling your partner what to do and getting it, you know, having like them behave or obey, right? So there's still all of that kink is going on, but without the demeaning bit of saying shut the fuck up to you. Because again, I don't react well to being told to shut the fuck up. As a woman, I feel I'm constantly being monitored for how much and how loudly I speak. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that coming out of my partner's mouth would be one of those moments, that line where I would go instantly
That's
rigid,
a mood
like
kill.
You said, what the huh? Huh? Right? So I love that as dominant and like controlling and like verbally demanding Rowan was throughout this book, he never said a demeaning word to Sloane. I mean, outside of the one scene where he had to tell her he didn't love her.
And but he had her. To save her life.
That was saving her life. But everything, he was like, get on the table. And like he said it forcefully, but he didn't say,
he never called her a bitch.
And get on the table. Or, you know, he's
you
like,
know,
hey, but no,
he didn't
never
talk to her like that.
He would be like,
yeah,
you know, good girls get rewards.
Yes.
Bad girls get punishment, you know? Are you being a brat? You know, but he never said a demeaning word to her, even in the throes of his most dumb obsessions, you know, wanting her to, turn around and do this or do that or take this. He just never added any of those extra bits that sometimes make the scenes uncomfortable because you're just like, tell me to fucking shut up.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, listening to him in these scenes was just like super, super hot. I don't know. Now I'm kind of like interested to see how it would go if I'd be like, okay, now go ahead. You could talk to me. Go ahead and say these dirty things to me. Go ahead and talk to me like that. Let's see how it goes. Because Dan loves it when I do express myself. When I tell him to go harder or fuck me harder or whatever, whatever, that gets him off. It really excites him. But when he says it to me, I'm just like, And it's not so much of like the words that he's saying. It's just that there's sound. I know that sounds really bad. Like as a person who's, I feel like, really sensitive to sound, I just don't like noises. And that is a noise. Speaking.
Speaking is a noise. You're correct. It does produce sound waves that then enter your ear and
me.
Are translated by your brain into words. Yep. That is how it works. Okay. I don't have a huge, like, there's definitely, and we've talked about it when we read them, there's definitely scenes where there's too much talking. And when the guy is just like effusive about it, I think that's when I start to get like, over the top.
Okay.
And it's not even, because it's not even in dominant things. God, I'm trying to think of one in particular that we've read recently where I've been like, you could be quieter. I want to say it was also in the mirror scene.
It was the vampires.
In the vampire books. Uh-huh. I think when they're saying things like, oh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah, I love the stuff that sounds more like porn.
That is porn sounds. Yeah.
I think those are the things that are harder to. I just don't like, hearing that in the bedroom.
Okay.
But like things that are, can be used for direction and like I think can be helpful for the whole mood. I'm trying to think of positive vocal interactions I've had in the past.
I think an extra element of this book in particular, though, is the relationship that has grown so intensely between these two characters, though, right? Like, you get them in, say, for the vampire book that we read. They have known each other for centuries. They've known each other for a long time. They've had this attraction with each other, and he loves her, and she loves him. But there's just something so much more intense about this connection between these two serial killers that I think...
Well, I think the vampire one's the least helpful book to reference, because that's what I also thought was really unique about this book, was the length of time.
Yes.
Especially because we read so much paranormal. So many of our books...
Insta-love.
Had insta-love, which is bullshit. As we all know, I believe to be bullshit. And yes, in a way, it seemed like Rowan was instantly in love with Sloane. And he was.
I think he was infatuation at first.
He was infatuated.
Yeah.
And he definitely saw potential for there to be like a really great connection and love. But it's not the same as like, you're my fated mate.
Right. I gotta be.
I can't even look at anyone else now that you exist in my life.
Right.
You know? And so this felt much more like 4 years is a long fucking time to slowly court a woman.
Yeah.
And it felt so good when they finally, and like, I think that was it. Cause the whole sex scene started with his declaration of, oh, I guess it wasn't the start. It was the second scene. Okay. Cause she sees the tattoo on his back.
Yes, of her drawing.
So she did this drawing when she was at the restaurant, and cause she's an artist, and she left it for him, and it's a raven. And after they, you know, they just had this intense night of sex, and then he gets up from the bed, and she hasn't really seen his back because, you know, she was the one that was mostly injured, like was really injured. So she just got to be a little cautious. And he did all the things. But so for the first time, she's seeing his back, his naked back, and he's got the tattoo. He's got the raven drawing that she did on his back. His whole shoulder is done in this drawing. And she's just like, what? You know, immediately like has all these questions and starts, you know, asking him stuff. And he, of course, like puts her where he wants her to be and puts his dick in her because he does that a lot. And then he starts telling her things because he likes to have serious conversations with her while his dick is inside.
And she's struggling
with life at that moment. She's trying to continue to exist, and she's like, what?
I'm gonna play this game. This is gonna be a fun
this might be a thing that needs to happen.
Yes.
But he's like, why do you think I have it? And she's like, oh, you like me. And he's like, and that's when he has this giant outbursty monologue that I fucking loved.
Yeah.
Where he's like, Sloane, you think I set this all up and I've been doing this and seeing you once a year and ripping my heart out every time you walk away because I like you? Mm-hmm. You think I framed your painting or your drawing and put it on the wall where I can see it every day in my kitchen? Because I like you. You think I got this tattooed on my body and I'm sitting here balls deep in your, you know, beautiful body because I like you.
I more than like you, Sloane.
More than like you, and you fucking more than like me. She's like, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's
the fucking best.
It's really good.
So good.
And so much more with that goddamn accent.
That Irish accent.
How is it that it just...
I don't know.
It's stupid how amazingly I could just fall into it. I don't know.
It's so hot.
It's ridiculously hot. But,
But yeah, I would like to be tossed around like a rag doll.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
Lark's got it right. Little manhandling never hurt.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, now I'm excited for their story. I mean, we already know they're hooking up in this book, but she and Lachlan.
Oh, super excited. Just because I just read it in the blurb. It has a fake dating trope. They have to fake marry.
Oh my God.
They hate
God.
Each other. So we get, like, this one's an enemies to lovers situation, obviously. Sloane and Roan, liked each other and were friends, right? And
right.
It was just a slow build. We had to do the slow build in this book. But Lark and Lachlan hate each other.
Oh.
And then it just said that she has to convince him to fake marry her for some fucking reason.
It's got to be because of her rich family.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's just the blurb on Goodreads.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to save him from the boss he has to work for, not really by choice.
Oh.
But he's got to fake marry her. And then, the marriage blurs into real marriage. Just am like, I love fake dating.
I love it. It's so good. What is the second one called?
It's called Leather and Lark, and it should be out anytime this year. I don't know if it has a date. Let me look and see. Goodreads says just 2024.
Okay.
Which is not good enough. Let's see if Amazon has a more specific date. June. According to Amazon, it'll come out in June of 2024. June 4th.
Fuck yes.
So just a couple months for everybody who's listening to this.
This is very reminiscent of our release of The Fourth Wing. And then we were like, yes, the Iron Throne? The Iron
Flame.
Flame. The Iron Throne.
Should we go back and do that one?
Hell fucking yes, we should go back and do that one. I haven't. Like, I know we've got it. And I even bought the physical book.
I haven't finished it either.
Oh, Okay, we need to put it back on the list.
I got into a headspace where I like could not do this. I had to do like lighter things. I was like, I'm not here. I'm not here for this yet.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So it'd be interesting. We could put it on the list because I haven't finished Iron Flame. Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting.
I think also because it was like a lot of this shit was happening at work already, sure. And then like all the people at work were just talking about it, and it just tied in together with me being like, I can't with that book right now.
Well, let's give it a few more months then, and then I think we can get back into it.
Oh yeah, I think we can, because also like that's just the second in a, you know, like 5 or 7 book series. So yeah, we don't need to rush to it. The next one's not going to come out for probably a year.
It's just like,
but yes,
I like that we read this book and then the second part of it is not too far away. So
no, yeah, it's basically 3 months away.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I'm so excited for that because
fucking
really
brilliant writing. I mean, just I love the narration. Obviously, I can't go on and on enough about how much it's so great, but the storyline and how she wrote it, how Brynn wrote it, just brilliant.
So I think there's another thing, like this isn't directly okay, there's a couple things we still have to talk about. So we definitely we have to talk about the secret chapter, so we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, because I didn't read the secret chapter.
No, we'll do that soon, but I do think something that came up, and I kind of want to get your opinion on it now that you've read it.
Okay.
And listen to it, you know, is so in one of my book groups that I'm in online, a lady came to the group. She has the book, but she hasn't read it yet. And her 12-year-old daughter came home from school with it. Or not with it, or she was talking about it because her friend has it and is reading it. So she basically got her daughter to admit that she'd also started reading it, and they were like, you know, X number of chapters in, whatever. And so the lady comes to the book group and is like, okay, I haven't read it yet. What do you guys think for a 12-year-old?
No.
And like everyone jumped in and was like, take the fucking book away, call the school. And I was all like,
Well, you actually were that 12-year-old.
I was that 12-year-old.
You were absolutely that 12-year-old.
I was, and I don't know, it's only going to, you know, if people know the book, but I was around 12, and this book, I think, is a lot, the book I read was way worse than this book.
This one has bad context in it.
Yeah. So I read Kiss the Girls by James Patterson, and it's got a guy who kidnaps women and rapes them and keeps them in an underground lair. And he does other absolutely horrible things. There's a scene with milk and a snake that will forever scar my life. That I will never get out of my brain.
Yeah.
Especially because it got into my brain at 12, mm-hmm. which is too young for that shit to get into your brain.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to put it into like context like that, obviously. Because I'm like, man, I read worse shit, and I think that this isn't great for a 12-year-old, but it really depends on your 12-year-old, right?
I think it does. And, I mean, like, that's, like, it's a very difficult line.
But now you've read it, so what do you think?
I
kind of had this conversation before you had read it.
Sure, yeah. And there's a couple of different things. I was 12 when I, you know,
quote-unquote
lost my virginity. Now, I have to say I wasn't full-on having, like, sex. That was just like in out, it was done, and I didn't start having sex until I was 16. But I do have a teenager in the house now who is turning 14 next month, and I don't know that I would be comfortable with her reading this book.
Revisiting especially the sex scene, and like we said, even that, like that ending kiss of cum scene, as soon as I like reheard that, I was like, yeah, this is what a 12-year-old cannot read.
No, you know, and it's
this is
like,
the bit that needs to be taken out.
the prostate scene, and like it's just, I think it's just a little bit too much. And I even think things out of traditional sex. Not that I'm against it. I think anal is great. But I don't know that I think that younger ears are ready for that, because that's just not what they have learned yet. Or at least I am assuming that. I don't really know what they're learning. I don't know what they know. I didn't know anything about anal sex until I was way, way later. So I think
that they are knowing about this already, because I feel like I did. I just had a, no matter, I think it doesn't, there's not going to be a perfect way to provide this information.
So maybe then it depends on the kid.
I think it's going to end up depending on the kid. Mm-hmm. And I think trying to restrict the book from a 12-year-old is just going to ensure that they're going to find a way to get it. So I think it might be better to, that mom had better read that book fucking immediately.
Yes.
And then be prepared to have these
conversations.
Consent conversation, mm-hmm. like cohesive discussion about the stuff in the book with her daughter, because she's going to find a way to read this.
Absolutely.
I guarantee it.
It's going to happen no matter what.
My mom didn't put a break on anything I wanted to read. And that's how I ended up reading Kiss the Girls at 12.
Yeah.
Which really should not have been allowed to happen, but it happened, and then I was scarred.
Right.
I'm still a fine human being, and I'm not scarred for life. It didn't wreck me, and it didn't turn me into a serial killer or anything awful, but that the snake milk scene fucking kills me to think about to this day, and I'm like, oh, I wish I didn't have that in my brain.
I'm too afraid to ask.
Oh, I'll tell you off the... Yes. I really... Like, either the people have read the book and they know what I'm saying, or they haven't, and they'll either have to make the choice to go read it and fuck their brain up with this information.
There you go.
Or not. I'm not going to say it on the podcast. But I think that having a discussion about these kind of scenes would have been... I still shouldn't have read that. Because that was abuse. Because it was a masochistic rapist
who
took and murdered girls. You know, like that wasn't. This is a dark rom com. This at least is still funny. And it is a place of love. Like all of sex is love in this book. Mm-hmm. It's not coercive. I mean, they mention what happened to her in her past, but it's not on the page.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to read that scene.
Right, exactly. Right. We know that it has happened to her. We just don't get to experience it with her.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
Because I don't
want to
read
that. Right. We don't want to. Yeah.
So not for these books. That's for other books.
It really does depend on.
It does depend. And so you need to know your student. You need to know your kid.
You got to know your kid.
And how to talk to them.
You also have to have the understanding that they're going to learn about this one way or the other. And maybe learning it with you in a more controlled environment, in a safe space, that would probably be easier than them learning it off the street or whatever.
And I think at least romance books are nicer and more gentle, I think. And we talked a lot about how their sex itself is not gentle versus actual porn. Because I'm pretty sure that was the first time I encountered anal, was seeing like a fuzzy skinamancer, you know, like porn.
Okay, yeah.
With like friends or something, you know?
Yeah.
And that was horrifying. And I was like, oh God, no. Oh God. I was already like a little bit nervous about the whole sex concept, but now my butt is involved. Yeah.
And this TV and is not working
not
right.
Nicely, like really aggressively. And you're just like, that doesn't feel like that would be okay. Right? And okay, this isn't probably the best romance to start with, but if they've started with others, then they can have a more gentle version of sex.
Sure.
From a female perspective too. Written by a woman, for women, in consent. Like, I do think this might be the better way than any of the shit someone's going to see online.
Probably. I think you're probably right. There's a controlled element, safer element to it, right?
Yeah.
But again, I think it really does depend. Like, I don't know that I would be ready to give my teenager that scene.
I'm not saying anyone really should, and I don't have kids, so I don't have to make this choice.
Yeah. I think about some of the other books that are on my bookshelf and whether or not I would allow her to read it. I don't think, if she snuck one, I wouldn't be pissed about it. I'd be like, hey, just so you know, like, there's a sex stuff in there. But it's not like it's never going to happen for her. It's going to happen eventually, you know? So I don't want to keep that kind of stuff from her, but that warning is there. But there are some dark aspects in this book that I think are...
This book in particular.
And
I think the unfortunate bit and the reason like this is coming up is that the cover is so attractive and enticing
it's
to children.
It's super cute. It's bright pink and black. It's like the cutest fucking
and like
book.
Cartoony.
Yes,
a little
cartoony.
Bit. It's like packaging menthol cigarettes with like a camel on them and telling like
in
showing
the pink
them to
and
kids.
Black fucking I bought those when I smoked.
Of course we fucking did.
They were fucking cute. Propaganda. It fucking works, guys.
So I do think part of it is the author's fault because she picked an adorable fucking cover that doesn't say kids shouldn't read this book.
Right? That was not, that wasn't part of the trigger warning, I don't think. It didn't say NS17 or anything. So
No. But obviously, if those kids read that trigger warning, they're still going to really read the book.
It's almost way more enticing.
Like, 9 times out of 10, I read a content warning and I go, bring it the fuck on.
Sure. Yeah. Here's another thing, too, is that, like, so they're still growing, right? They still, their brains aren't developed. They're still,
no.
They don't understand emotion. They have no idea what they're feeling. They don't know that. I mean, maybe they understand that these sexual acts are coming out of a place of love, right? Between Rowan and Sloan. But they also, like, they don't know what love is. Maybe
they don't have context.
They don't have that context.
They don't.
So, like, they
don't know.
Right, exactly.
Not at 12. Not romantic love.
Not romantic love, because that's...
They know their parents and sure. You know, filial. Yeah, they know all that.
But that not from their own personal experiences.
No, no, no. Romantic love is a fucking mystery at 40, bitches.
It takes that's experience. And I'm sorry if you're having those type of experiences soon, like... A lot of it at 12. That's a lot.
Yeah.
I guess the emotional aspect of it too. So they can't grasp that. And I don't think that that's easy for them as well. So the physical part, I can understand a lot of people hesitating about that because, ooh, anal sex and fingers up the butt and things like that. Whatever. That happens. Adults can do that to each other. But children, because they are children,
they don't have
that concept yet. They don't.
Mm-mm.
So it all depends on the kid, really. I think that's... 10 minutes later, that's my final answer.
It does. It does depend on the kid. It depends on so many things, and it's not an easy answer.
No.
I just thought it was an interesting thing, because like the whole book group, everyone who'd read the book jumped in with a definitive note, like just hardcore, like screaming, like, take the book! And I was just like, meh, it's, you know, there's things. Yeah.
Nice. Good.
I was like, you know, I was like, is it great? Probably not. I don't know your kid.
Yeah.
You should read it. Then you can have the conversation. Because if you don't and you just pull it, she's going to get that book. It's not a way. There's libraries. And her friend has it. That was the other piece. I was like, you might want to tell the friend's mom just so that she knows.
I was like, my mom bought me this book.
And I'm like, hey, that would have been me, like, because my mom did buy all of those books. And I didn't sneak Kiss the Girls out of nowhere.
Right.
We went to the used bookstore and it was a used book. She hadn't read it. I'm sure she didn't know what I was reading.
Sure.
But it was a James Patterson. He's like thriller killer dude, thriller, right? So they were killing. Like, she probably was like, well, there's nothing in that. It's a, you know, it'll be a thriller. It's a killer, you know, like.
No sense. Oh,
it was bad, guys. It was upsetting. It was not loving. It's not. But I also read a lot of romance young.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a problem with that. That was good. Again, I think it can be beneficial because it does, a lot of them are written by women. So they have a perspective that I think is good to see instead of some of the more male gaze centered porns. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a non-porn person anyway. I'm a book person.
Sure.
I mean, like, this is what I want, not porn. So
right. I am both, but I get it.
Okay. Super secret chapter we need to talk about. I guess it's not secret. It's just the bonus chapter that you didn't
get.
That
I didn't get. It's a secret for me. Tell me.
So, and I mentioned everything, how I like freaked out because I was like, did I imagine? Because it's detailed. It's a detailed scene. There's sex in it. And then it ends in their wedding. And I was like, I made up their whole fucking wedding? That's wild. They go married.
Well, I do know that he proposed to her.
He proposed.
Yes.
Which we didn't mention, but was so on brand for them. He put the ring in the eyeball socket of their next victim.
Because she plucks eyeballs out. I don't pluck them.
Well, she doesn't gouge them. He says she gouges them. She goes, right. I pluck them like a lady.
That's right.
But anyway, it starts out with, so this is the bonus scene, the bonus chapter that you can only read and not listen to. She's all suspicious. She's like, skullduggery, you're up to something. She's trying to call him out on shit. And he's like, I'm not up to anything. I'm just making out with you, whatever. So then they have a little romp around their kitchen. And he's like, okay, just a second. I'll be right back. I got something special. And he comes out of the bedroom in a dragon onesie with a purple dildo in the very first murder, her book has a double-dicked dragon man. She's reading monster porn, like we do, like us ladies do.
My God, that's so
and
good.
He found a dragon onesie. He got a purple dildo. And yeah, gets all up in their double penetration scenario, of course. And the whole thing is hilarious because it's a, you had a suit like this, a onesie with the unicorn.
I do.
And he's like, this isn't breathing. I might die. So he's trying to.
He's like dying. Of exhaustion or overheating.
Of overheating, like dripping sweat underneath the hood of the dragon with the horns.
Yes.
And it's like a velour. She keeps calling it like velveteen. Like, you're going to like have heat stroke and die because you're fucking me in this dragon, velveteen dragon costume. And he's like, I can't. She's like, just take it off. And he's like, no, I've committed to the bit.
Oh my God. That's so fucking good.
So that's good. That's the fun scene.
Aww.
And then he sends her off on a girl's spa weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And she's all worried. She's all up in her head about the wedding anyway, because she doesn't know who to invite. She doesn't really have anyone in her life outside of Lark. She thinks she should invite her parents, but they abandon her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we never mention them because they're just not a part of her life. They kind of just, they don't love her. And she wants, like, he says, you know, it's fine, do it, let's do whatever. And she's thinking of, like, how he was at the gala, how everyone knew him, and he's so sociable and personable, and everybody talks to him. And she's like, you know, he's probably going to want to have a huge wedding with all of these people who know him, and I will only have like two people on my side, and it'll look weird, and I don't want to be the center of that much attention. She's very shy. She's very like introverted.
Yeah.
So she's really freaking out internally about the wedding. She hasn't voiced any of this because she's afraid he's going to think she's changed her mind and doesn't want to marry him. So anyway, he sends her off on this spa weekend that's her engagement present or something. And so she's hanging out with Lark, and I forgot the other friend's name, not the one who's at Fionn's house, not Rose, the circus lady, but another one of his friends that
the
she's
one that
become
she
friends with.
Become friends with. I thought it
yeah,
was
like Anna or something.
I think it is Anna.
I think it's Anna. And so they're at the spa, and as they're doing their whole spa day on like day one, and the girls are like, this would be a nice place for a wedding. And she's like, yeah, I would like it, but I don't think anybody else would. It's not theirs. Like, my parents would hate it. You know how they are. And I don't know about the guest list would be so large for Rowan. And I just don't think so. And she's really in her head about the whole thing. And then they sneak out of like, it's a massage, you know, and they sneak out. And then all of a sudden, Rowan's there, and he's arranged for their whole wedding to happen this weekend if she wants it.
Oh.
Because he knows too. He's all like, you're up in your head about it. You think you're trying to make it so that everybody else will be happy, but I just want whatever you want.
Aww.
So I have your dress. I have the cake. I have everything. We can have it tomorrow. My brothers will hear. Rose will be here. You know, Lark's already here.
Oh,
everyone we want to be will be here. If you don't want to do it, we won't do it. We'll do another week. You know, we'll plan something else. We can come back here in another weekend if that's what you want. He's just like, whatever, but don't make this about anybody but us. I just want to be married to you.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And so they get married that weekend.
Oh, that's
in a
so
cute,
perfect.
Small ceremony by the beach in a private, like, beach inn. And,
yeah,
you know,
as it should
Cape
be.
Cod or something.
Wow. So,
it's a very lovely bonus chapter that I just ruined for everybody.
No.
I gave them a heads up. They don't have to listen.
Our entire thing is a spoiler. So if you're still here an hour and 40 minutes later, I think.
We just told you the whole book.
We just told you the whole book. That is so sweet. I love that so much.
Isn't
and
that
guys,
so good?
Like, that is the reason why we like these men. Like,
of course. He put on, like, this is definitely the kind of guy's guy in appearance, external appearance, that nobody would expect to put on a purple dragon onesie to fuck his wife, his fiance, because she reads purple dragon porn.
Nope, never.
And I'm like,
never.
I want someone that committed.
Hell,
I want somebody that fucking committed. He's read the book, and he's like, and yeah, he had a name and everything. He's like, I am Sol, Prince Dragon. I will come to mate you, silly woman.
Oh my God, that's so fucking great.
I don't know why I'm a sentient dragon creature, but I know I must mate with human lady.
Oh my God, that's fucking... Oh, I love that she calls him man guy.
Yes,
they still, like,
man guy.
Oh, that's so good. And then he loves, like, he just keeps trying to steal her ebook. She's like, download it like a normal person.
I know.
Their
banter
is great.
I love it too. And that's the kind of thing where I would gift him with an ebook with my account already on it.
There you go.
And I'd be like, here you go. Or an e-reader. I'd be like, now you can see everything I'm reading. Like, if he expressed that kind of interest in my books, mm-hmm. hell yeah, that is what I would do.
Oh, yeah.
Is I would buy a third fucking ebook or e-reader, because I already have two Kindles. And I'd load up my catalog on it, and I'd be like, here you go. I'll tell you as I'm reading.
It is. I did tell Dan that. It's like, I think I read the best book I've ever read in my entire life, or listened to, because mm-hmm. it was just so good. And I want him to listen to it, but who knows? But every time he opens up our Kindle, it is. It's just like self-help books, finances, and then like Dirty Dragon Men.
It's all you need in this life.
You know?
Okay. Well, we think we've exhausted this book now.
Look, this is... we've talked about the entire thing. And I cannot stress enough how much you need to listen to this. Read it too, obviously. So that you can get the bonus part of it. But yeah, fucking brilliant. I think it's going to be hard to fucking top this for the rest of the year. And this is book one.
Book one!
Look at that.
I have also the heads up of having read book two, and I know that I love book two, too.
Wait a minute. Wait, how did you... I thought you said it hasn't come out yet.
Oh, no. Our second book of the year, not book two of this series. Oh. No. I haven't managed to read that.
You meant book two of this series. I was like, do that?
No, I'm not that kind of magical. Trust me, if I could get this publisher to give me the book early, I'd fucking do it.
I
might send them the link to this podcast to be like, hey, drop book two in our laps, ladies.
We've done an arc before.
Sure. Just get it to us. We'll still buy it twice, because I already bought this book twice.
Yes, that's true.
So don't fucking
Hell,
worry
I'll fucking
about
buy it.
It.
That's just another extra one that I don't need to buy, because you already have it twice.
Yep. There you go. No. For us, our next book for the second episode of this year, I have also read book two, and I, even though you said it would be hard to, I mean, I don't think it's better. It's not
hard
better.
To top this one. Yes.
But it's fucking good.
Oh, all right. Well, I can't. Well, let's rate and then we'll talk about that one.
Yes.
Fucking 10. Like, I just.
10. It's a 10. I don't even know why.
You haven't even done the math yet. Like.
How could you absolutely think this would be anything but...
And we're not the only ones.
No.
It was already blowing up on all of my feeds before. I was just like, I don't know if I want to get it. It's just, you know, a new series or whatever. But I'm fucking glad that you got it and that you put it on our list, because it is by far my favorite.
Oh, yeah. It was just... The cover was too enticing. It was ridiculously enticing. So it started blowing up in the social media. And I saw it and I was just like, all right, I fucking got to read that. And so I got it from the library on my Libby app.
Yeah.
And as soon as I finished it, I was like, oh, I have 17 hours worth of content to talk about now.
Hell yeah. Like,
I need this to be on our list. And that's luckily we said we wanted to do different books, because I was like, oh, thank God, I have a justifiable reason for making this the first book of next year.
It is, and it just fell into our laps perfectly. I'm glad that I had the opportunity to just like sit and fucking read. And I love contemporary. I love paranormal too, but I
go through phases with books.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
As you know, we talked about some in like the pandemic, like I really needed the escapism of paranormal, because this world sucked so bad. Mm-hmm. But now, like, I'm feeling a different need, and I'm feeling a lot more like I need to connect with just regular ass people falling in love.
Exactly.
And that's what I need. And so, yeah, we're going to read more contemporary. The next book is not contemporary. Well, I mean, it's historical.
Okay. I was going to say.
It's not paranormal. It's not. There's nothing. It's, you know, but it isn't contemporary, because contemporary means now. It is historical.
Yeah.
So it's Bringing Down the Duke by Evie Dunmore. And it's taking place in England, Britain, right around like the late 1800s, when the women's suffrage movement is getting kicked off. So there's a lot of stuff about women's rights and suffrage and being freed of the strains of being tied to men.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
It's that does sound good.
But then there's also like super hot Duke sex.
Oh my God. I like Duke sex. All right.
So I'm very excited for you to read this, because I love my historicals. I read a lot of them, like anything Regency era, anything like that. I just love.
Okay.
I love it. But I love when they put the spice into it. As opposed, like, I love my Austens, too. I love my actual Regency period pieces, which don't have heating up because they're written, you know, at that time when right. they don't really write sexy stuff.
You don't write about that stuff.
But I love when it's of that era, but written currently and put all the dirty filth into it, because these two get a little nasty. So,
well, I can't wait. It's going to be good.
I love it. And it's definitely like an enemies to lovers thing. And so you're going to be super psyched for that.
Okay.
Right? Because you like that. You like it when they don't like each other.
I do. Like, because it's that forbidden love, truly, that I, that even if they're enemies and even if they are friends and not mm-hmm. supposed to be, like not mm-hmm. so taboo that it's brother and stepsister type of deal. Although I did read a contemporary that was sort of like that. I was like,
did you read a stepsister or step family?
It was
porn?
An adopted son who fell in love with his baby sister. And it's fucking weird.
Making all kinds of faces over
it's
here.
It's sort of an adopt. Like, okay, that's a whole different other.
I have small issues when people are raised together.
They were definitely raised together. Like, he'd taken her as a baby to go visit his family home that his parents were murdered in. Like, it's just, it's crazy. But he always grew up thinking, not considering his best friend and his little sister and their parents were who adopted him. He never considered them family. He just never thought he was worthy enough of that. But they did, except
you
it
don't
doesn't
have
matter.
To tell me this. No, like, you read the book. It's fine. You can read whatever you want to read.
No, I'm just saying, like, when it gets a little bit weird, taboo like that, it gets, but I can do the enemies to lovers because they're not related.
No relation.
Because even like blood doesn't incest does
I know
it's not just blood.
No, so, there's it's familial ties.
It's
yeah.
familial ties, yeah. Anyway.
Well, we might read that later. Who knows? Yes. So join us next week, bringing down our next episode, whatever. Bringing down the Duke, Evie Dunmore. Who was the narrator in that? You wrote it down.
Elizabeth Jasicki. Okay. Right? Jasicki?
Jasicki? We're not sure.
Jasicki. Yeah.
Jasicki. But in the meantime, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to tell us all about how much you loved Butcher and Blackbird, we would just love to hear about that as well. You can find us on social media at @dirtybooks or email us directly at dirtybooks@gmail.com. And in all those places, it is with three H's.
And you can visit us on our website at dirtybooks.com and most places that you can find podcasts. If you guys can go there, rate, review, subscribe, that'd be great. Thank you, Jim Townsend, for your music. And tonight, no, not tonight. And for now, we'll say goodbye. What the fuck did I just say?
I don't
Sorry.
Know. I've forgotten how to talk also. And
it's been 2 hours.
It's so long.
And with that, we'll say goodnight. This is Saylet.
This is Kalina.
We'll see you later.
Bye.
Yeah, you've been listening to Reading Dirty Books with Kalina and Saylet. Be sure to tune into the next episode. Some more of your dirty books read to you. And if you're listening on a format that allows you to give a rating, please do that for them.